Les colloques du Collège de France.
Je voudrais commencer en remercier le professeur Sylvain Tabasson et Madame Sylvie Sportouche aussi. C'est toujours un plaisir de venir ici, d'être accueilli ici au Collège de France. Generous to have the entire conference in English, which is probably all of our second language, best second language, at least. So that itself illustrates some of the themes of the globalization, mondialization, and the potential for what we might export to other worlds, to other planets. So I want to talk today about three concepts that we've discussed throughout the conference, but some more than others. So we've had many discussions of property rights in space, but interestingly, the title of the conference, On the Province of All Mankind, we've had a little bit less attention to the word province. So I'm going to start with the word province, and then property, and then a third concept of planetary protection, which is also mentioned in the Outer Space Treaty and with different terminology, and that I think plays an important role in this context. And what I try to do in my paper is look at not only province and property and planetary protection as separate, but in combination, and consider how the role of these three principles or concepts in combination may actually be worse than any of the individual problems that we've discussed so far, and the kinds of limitations that we need in order to avoid these worst case scenarios or catastrophic or existential risks. So I'm going to argue that the combination of province property and inadequate planetary protection poses catastrophic or existential risk to the existence of life, and that we need not only prudent limits, some of which are potentially available in the Outer Space Treaty, but we may need more, but we also need to move from the perspective that we've accumulated so far from national law to international law. I'll argue that we need to move beyond that to interplanetary law to deal with this combination of province, property, planetary protection, and the potential for extreme catastrophic risk. So let me start with the first, province. As you know, the Outer Space Treaty has this phrase, the province of all mankind in English, the title of this conference. And it's kind of a curious or puzzling phrase. The word province is not the same word as common heritage of mankind. And one may wonder, why does the Outer Space Treaty use this term, province of all mankind? And in my paper, I cite several different interpretations of the words province of all mankind, but many scholars point to the words province of all mankind as emphasizing or underscoring or linking to the next paragraph, which talks about free exploration and use, free access. And as Michael Byers pointed out yesterday, in the first paragraph also, what shall be the province of all mankind is not space itself, but the exploration and use of outer space. Nevertheless, it's saying that the exploration and use of outer space is the province of all mankind, and many scholars see that as connected to the free access in the second paragraph. And there's also the language about for the benefit of all, which many scholars see as corresponding to benefit sharing or an egalitarian aspiration for fairness, for treatment of all countries, or indeed all mankind, as the province language is broader than all countries, but all mankind, to share equally or fairly or in an egalitarian way It's interesting to note that the French version does not use the word province, but uses this word apanage, l'apanage de l'humanité tout entière. And that word in French, as I understand, is actually more of a property concept that refers to a kind of inheritance that younger children, not the oldest child who would inherit the father's estate, but that the younger children also were entitled to a kind of secondary inheritance, and that was the apanage, deriving from the word pain, for giving bread. And so it'd be interesting to compare. I think Professor Besson mentioned several other versions in her opening remarks yesterday. Interesting to compare what words are used in the different languages that in which the treaty is published. So the word province is expressing here something about freedom of access, something about egalitarian sharing, maybe something about an inheritance. That starts to sound a little bit more like heritage. But it's interesting that this term was chosen. And so now I'll suggest there are both sort of pros and cons to this term, province. On the one hand, there's this concept of fairness. And indeed, there's a book just published this year by Stephen Buono called The Province of All Mankind, in which he retraces the negotiating history of the Outer Space Treaty. And he argues that the term Province of All Mankind was an expression of egalitarian care of the entire human family. and there's the meaning of free access. But free access, as expressed here, can mean overuse. That is, free access, open access, that's the root of the problem of the Tragedy of the Commons, which Garrett Hardin called the Tragedy of the Commons. Other scholars have said should have been called the Tragedy of Open Access, that without restrictions, resources can be overused, depleted, and so we need some limits on these resources. And it's interesting now to compare that to the phrase common heritage of mankind, which, as we heard in the talks this morning, corresponds to some kind of limitation on access, perhaps a pragmatic limitation or a more absolute limitation in different versions or different periods of its evolution. Okay, now the phrase province of all mankind, so let's say that if, or to the extent that, the phrase province of all mankind means free access, then it opens the door to potential overuse. And indeed, free access is itself explicitly in Article 1 of the OST. And so there's this risk of overuse, depletion of resources. But further, at least the English version of province of all mankind is gendered. It uses the term mankind, and most writers today add a little H-U before that to say province of humankind. The French version says all of humanity. It's also focused on humanity, and it's very common, very typical for all of us to talk about all of humanity as if that were all of the interests in the world, and to speak about human rights as a very broad concept. And yet in this context of outer space, humanity is a very small fraction of all the life on Earth, millions of species on Earth, and of all the potential life in the universe. So it's kind of it's an awkward choice to say that all of outer space is the province of humanity, as if it were the privilege or the inheritance of human beings on this little planet to have the exploration and use of all of outer space. So there's this anthropocentric character and a geocentric character, as if even if it were all life on Earth, not only humans, but all life on Earth having the province of exploration and use of outer space. It's curiously pre-Copernican to say that Earth has the province of all of outer space, of the universe, and moreover to treat the Earth and outer space as two categories, where one category is the Earth and the second category is everything else in the universe. And indeed, the Outer Space Treaty speaks as if not only other planets, but even the moon of the Earth, our moon, is in the second category of outer space. And so there's a curious geocentrism here, and it's really could be seen as an audacious claim, a kind of presumptuous claim that all of the rest of outer space or its exploration and use is the province of Earth. In my paper, I suggest the analogy that imagine 500 years ago, when the Collège de France was founded, and on the cusp of European exploration and colonization of the so-called New World, Europeans or European monarchies asserting that the New World is the province of Europe. And indeed, that is roughly, one might say, the actual history of the doctrine of discovery, which was only renounced by the Pope just recently. Approximately 500 years later. So one could imagine that 500 years ago and compare that to this language today, that all of outer space is the province of mankind or of humanity or even of Earth life. And also consider the hypothetical situation of some extraterrestrial intelligence on some other planet in another solar system declaring that all of outer space is its province, including our Earth. And how shocked would we be if that ET arrived and declared that the use of Earth is the use and exploration of Earth is the province of their planet or their society? And it raises the question of what respect does the Outer Space Treaty have for other planets or other life? And I mentioned here Carl Sagan, who was an advocate of space exploration, nevertheless saying that even within our own solar system, which we might view as the closest, not our moon and our solar system as the province of Earth. But Sagan said, even there, if we find life on Mars, we should deem that Mars belongs to the Martians and leave Mars to the Martians. So we've talked a lot in this conference today and yesterday about the environmental problems of space debris and satellite congestion around the Earth, and the potential for mining the moon and asteroids relatively close to the Earth. But we should recognize that we are already a multiplanetary species of exploration and use of other planets. Human missions have already visited every planet in the solar system. This is a diagram, a chart from NASA. And many, many more such missions proceeding. And of course, many more satellites in Earth orbit and potentially satellites orbiting the moon. There are already, we have satellites orbiting Mars, we in the sense of humanity. And so one of my suggestions here is that at the very least in our little solar system, of which our planet is just one, we should start to think about an interplanetary set of relations rather than the undifferentiated category of all of the universe apart from the Earth as being it's a separate domain. All right, so province may be code for open access, for egalitarian sharing, but free access and potentially for a kind of audacious claim that humanity or Earth has the privilege or the inheritance of exploration and use of all of the rest of the universe. What about property? So we know that the Outer Space Treaty Article 2 says no national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, use, or occupation, or by any other means. But what does that mean for private property? And we've heard some discussion of that here at the conference today. All I want to do is observe that this is a subject of intense debate and many claims for private property rights, including, as has been mentioned earlier, under national laws enacted in the United States, in Luxembourg, the United Arab Emirates, and Japan, purporting to confer private property rights in space resources or the extraction of space resources on their citizens, and the Artemis Accords provision in Section 10 that the extraction of space resources does not inherently constitute national appropriation under OST Article 2. But one might question at least whether these national laws purporting to confer property rights, whether those property rights depend on some extension of national sovereignty. And there's at least a tradition in Anglo-American law and legal positivism that would say that property rights are only what the law makes enforceable. Or, as Jeremy Bentham said, property is only what you can expect from the law. Property and law are born together and die together, he said, and without law there is no property. So in that, and Morris Cohen, 1927, famous article called Property and Sovereignty, arguing that they're both kinds of rights to exclude and they're inextricably linked. And so the notion that a national law could create property rights without extending the enforcement of that law wherever the property rights are being claimed is kind of an empty set in this tradition. On the other hand, could property rights arise outside national law? There was some suggestion of that yesterday, and I just want to highlight that spacefaring private actors are thinking about that. And so here is Starlink. Starlink, the satellite constellation service owned by SpaceX, has had in its terms of service for several years this provision. The first sentence is kind of standard boilerplate that any disputes on Earth or in Earth orbit will be resolved under the law of the state of Texas. But the next two sentences are perhaps surprising, saying that for services provided on Mars or in transit to Mars, the parties agree that Mars is a free planet and no Earth-based government has authority or sovereignty over Martian activities. Disputes will be settled through self-governing principles at the time of Martian settlement. So this suggests that Starlink, SpaceX, is preparing to create its own law, its own rules, on Mars. Now, currently, Starlink has, as far as I know, has no services on Mars. But they've put this in the terms of service that their clients on Earth have signed on to this, including governments have signed on to this provision. So if you think that the private property rights could arise outside the national laws of Earth sovereign nations, then here's one scenario in which a private party is suggesting that. Of course, this is controversial, and many scholars would dismiss this as, for example, in violation of OST Article 6, which says that national governments have responsibility for their non-governmental entities. But you can see the challenge and the contest over that question looming in this provision. I want to focus on the incentives created by this system of private property rights. On the one hand, private property rights can be socially useful, desirable, as Katrina Wyman discussed about the arguments by Myers McDougall 60, 70 years ago. Private property rights motivate investment and innovation, and they can be useful in internalizing externalities, that is, in overcoming the problem of tragedy of the commons or undesirable side effects by, if to the extent that private property rights encompass the scope and scale of the external harms that would have occurred. And that was the argument by an economist named Harold Demsetz in 1967, the same year that the Outer Space Treaty was adopted. He published an article called Toward a Theory of Property Rights that argued that property rights arise to overcome or internalize externalities. On the other hand, they may not be successful in internalizing all of the externalities. That is, private property rights may lead to some conservation of resources, but also harmful effects, externalities on others that are not internalized in the private property rights. And so, particularly in situations where private property rights depend on or based on first possession by actual capture That is, the first person to seize the resource owns it. If that's the rule for acquisition of property rights, then that can lead to a race to capture, especially where the property right is to the extraction of resources and not to the stock or what we might call unearthed territory. We may need a different word for that on other planets if territory comes from terra. Maybe has a different etymology. But the notion that property rights by first possession, by capture, and only of the extraction, you can only own what you extract, that's familiar on Earth because that is the regime that we've often had for fisheries and for some other resources too. And it's interesting that the NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine in the first Trump administration said exactly that. He said, we're not saying we can make territorial claims, but what we believe we can do is extract and utilize the resources from the moon just like we can extract and utilize the tuna from the ocean. So how is that going for the tuna? And don't we need and don't we observe continued efforts in fisheries on Earth to establish limits so that the race to capture does not lead to overfishing, which it may often have. And so we have limits on overfishing in national and international law. We talked this morning about the Biodiversity Beyond National Jurisdiction agreement about to enter into force, and national restrictions, catch quotas, and other limits to try to prevent overfishing. So my suggestion here about property is that if the Outer Space Treaty, despite its restriction on national appropriation by claims of sovereignty, use, or occupation in Article 2, it nevertheless has some room, some latitude for establishment of private property rights, perhaps under national law or perhaps through non-national law bases, and to the extent that those property rights are based on first possession, capture, and extraction of resources without conservation of the stock of the territory, then there can be an undesirable race to capture and depletion of resources, a threat towards tragedy of the commons, which is compounds the problem of open access under the word province. And so what we need are some kinds of limitations, and we're familiar with several kinds of limitations on real property rights. We don't always view them as absolute and despotic dominion, as Blackstone said, but rather we have liability for harms to others, nuisance law in the Anglo-American tradition, or more generally civil liability for harms, quantity limits on use rights like fishery catch quotas, zoning, administrative allocation, so property rights don't have to be based on first possession, on first capture. They can be allocated administratively as in electromagnetic broadcast spectrum uses, which was discussed a bit yesterday. So we have ways of overcoming these problems of excessive property rights. Now, maybe Article 6 of the OST provides a basis for that through the provisions on responsibility and authorization and continuing supervision, and OST Article 7 on liability, plus the liability convention that followed the OST. But I think we need to make those more robust. And we could consider the possibility, if there is a useful role of property rights in space resources, some people would say, no, there's no useful role at all. But if there's some useful role, then we could consider the possibility of non-national allocation. So it would not violate OST Article 2, which prohibits national appropriation. So there could be private, as in the Starlink example, but there could be international allocation of property, or even interplanetary allocation of property rights, to the extent that these would be useful. And those property rights obviously could be conditioned and constrained to avoid their overuse. Okay, the last point is planetary protection. And I add this here because the problems of province and property can lead to tragedy of the commons. Those might be depletion of resources on an asteroid or on the moon or on Mars. The planetary protection problem suggests a different kind of tragedy, the tragedy of the uncommons, that is the title of an article I published in 2016. And the idea is that there are extreme low probability risks of mega catastrophes. And it's a different decision-making problem from the tragedy of the commons, which involves multiple users, open access, overuse of the resource. The tragedy of the uncommons involves even a single actor, the problem of neglect of very rare and very mega impact. And this is actually addressed in the Outer Space Treaty in Article 9, which calls on parties to avoid the contamination or harmful contamination of other celestial bodies and also avoid adverse changes in the Earth environment resulting from the introduction of extraterrestrial matter. And that's renamed forward contamination and back contamination, or backward contamination. And so we actually have not only OST Article 9, but an international planetary protection policies issued by COSPAR, the Committee on Space Research, which I think, as Philippe Achilles mentioned yesterday, predates the Outer Space Treaty back to 1958. And so COSPAR has policies to prevent harmful contamination, and US NASA and ESA, European Space Agency, have promulgated their own policies on planetary protection. But there are several weaknesses in this regime. One is that key terms in the OST are undefined, words like harmful or contamination. Secondly, that the international planetary protection policies from COSPAR require national implementation, and now with more and more countries going to space and private companies going to space, it's not clear that these planetary protection policies are being well applied to all the spacefaring actors, public and private. Even within the United States, there's significant uncertainty about which federal agency. So NASA has its planetary protection policies, but it does not regulate other agencies or private sector except through the payload permit process that the Federal Aviation Administration authorizes, and some of that may be moved to Department of Commerce. At least there were bills in Congress to do so. So there are significant gaps and uncertainties. And this has come up in the past. Back in the Apollo program to the moon, public health agencies insisted that the returning space capsule and astronauts be quarantined. And you can see there when the astronauts returned, splashed down in the ocean, and then they were put in a quarantine facility. And there's President Richard Nixon welcoming the astronauts back from Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins. Yet NASA or the US Navy breached the quarantine by opening the hatch of the capsule as it was floating in the ocean to get the astronauts out, thereby letting the air out from the capsule into the Earth environment. So if there had been microorganisms from the moon, they would have been released into the Earth environment. And this has recently become the subject of a lot of historical inquiry. So Dagmar de Groot has written about this. I wrote about this in my paper, Tragedy of the Uncommons. And people are concerned now that returning samples from Mars may pose some of these risks. And indeed, Mars is rated a higher risk by COSPAR than the moon. So we have the question of Mars sample returns by the United States and Europe, by China or other actors, maybe by private actors, and what will the biosafety regime be for these returning samples? We've also had the question of forward contamination. The Apollo program and other missions to the moon by other countries have left a lot of stuff on the moon, including lots of physical equipment and many other things on this list, including 96 bags of human waste, because the human waste is heavy, and so it saves fuel to leave those diapers in effect on the moon rather than launch them. This actually could be a subject, and many scientists are interested in going back to study these human waste to see if any microorganisms have survived for the 50 years or so that they've been there. And just in 2019, as you may know, a mission called Beresheet crashed on the moon and spilled a sample of tardigrades, multicellular microorganisms that look like a little bear with a suction cup for a mouth and are especially hardy maybe go dormant for long periods of time. Presumably that's why they were chosen for this experiment. So there are questions about whether we may have contaminated the moon with, or at least some small region of it. So this raises the question also of whether we will find life on other planets and what respect we may have for conserving life on other planets against forward contamination and also protecting the Earth from back contamination. So I've suggested we need to move beyond the national and the international to the interplanetary, and especially as human activities, public or private, settle bases for mining or settlements for living on other planets, we will need to differentiate the ways that we treat those different planets, as the COSPAR planetary protection policies differentiate risk for different planets. And so here's my last slide. I suggest that the combination of these three yields not only tragedy of the commons, but tragedy of the uncommons. So the risk of forward and back contamination adds a catastrophic element that just province and property by themselves are a more modest risk. And I suggest that we need some kind of prudent limits, not necessarily stifling limits, but prudent limits on access, on property rights, and on the risk that planetary protection policies would address. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.